Hi, welcome to Dessert Before Breakfast, the podcast where we review TV finales through the eyes of someone that's never watched the show. I'm Mike Dervell, and I've seen every episode of Star Wars Rebels.
I'm Melanie Germain, and I've seen none of Star Wars Rebels.
I am special guest star Michael Cohen, and I've seen every episode of Star Wars Rebels at least four times.
Wow.
Oh, suck it, Mike.
Take it. Take that.
I've seen it a measly one time.
Yeah.
The problem with me and Star Wars animated content is obviously covering it on my podcast, Rebel Cells, the Star Wars animation podcast. I watch things at least twice, right? Because we watch it the night that it premieres, and then I'll try and watch it again before we do our episode. And then I'll just watch it for fun. And then, you know, it'll be on Disney Plus. So I'll be like, well, I may as well watch through them again.
So I'm assuming it does sound like you're a fan of Star Wars Rebels then.
I don't think so. I'm not getting that.
Star Wars Rebels has the distinct honor of being my absolute favorite Star Wars content. It's my favorite story within the entire franchise. We will get into all of this, but these characters, one in particular, they are some of my favorites. And the story just to me really grabs everything that is great about Star Wars at some point or another. The Clone Wars also kind of does this, but the Clone Wars has a little bit more of an action edge to it. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't get as weird as often as Star Wars Rebels does.
Okay.
So it's like one of my favorite things in Star Wars is when Star Wars gets weird. You know, when Luke Skywalker's milking thalassirens on Octo, I'm like, that's my sweet spot. I know a lot of people are like, oh, that's gross. Oh, then he drinks the green milk. And I'm just like, the look on his face, the way that Rey acknowledges him, all of that is like, that I always go to that. It's like my perfect sweet spot of like, this is why I like Star Wars, as opposed to the reasons why I like Star Trek or I like The Last Starfighter or like other things that He-Man, right? Stuff that's like in that same sort of area, that same zone of like sci-fi, fantasy, space opera
genre.
Stuff. Like I love all that stuff. But I love Star Wars specifically because teddy bears overthrew the Empire, not spaceships. Yeah. Right? Like that is the stuff to me that is just so special about Star Wars and magical. And Star Wars Rebels brings that in spades. It really nails that.
Okay.
It's probably worth making a side note that we're releasing this episode on May the 4th. Which is the weird pun-based holiday around Star Wars.
Yeah. May the 4th be with you! Yeah.
And they're also releasing a new Star Wars series today as well, The Bad Batch, which is not a sequel to Rebels, but to Clone Wars.
Yeah, so Bad Batch is about a series of characters that were introduced in the most recent season of the Clone Wars, which was never supposed to happen. Oh, well, it was originally supposed to happen, and then Disney bought Lucasfilm and canceled Clone Wars, even though there was like another season and a half left of it. And then eventually they were like, oh, we'll put out some of this stuff on Netflix. And we got season 6. And then we heard like, we're never going to get anything else. It's done. And they even showed, like, they put animatics of the Bad Batch episodes up on the StarWars.com website. They showed them at Star Wars Celebration years ago. Like, I sat through a panel where we got to see a bunch of it, and they talked about it all as if, like, this is never going to happen. One of these stories is going to be a novel. One's going to be a comic book. And then they came back and they did it.
This is crazy. I didn't realize this was planned.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And
you're a big nerd, aren't you?
I'm a massive, massive nerd. And the only reason, here's the thing. I'm gonna break some hearts for some people here. Bad Batch isn't a series because people loved those episodes of the Clone Wars so much. It's backwards. Production timelines on animation are real long. Mm-hmm. The season 7 of Clone Wars only happened so that they could finish those 4 Bad Batch episodes to introduce us to these characters in advance of Bad Batch coming out on Disney Plus. In hindsight, it's very obvious that the reason why we get to enjoy Bad Batch now is because that we got to enjoy Clone Wars is because they wanted us to be hooked on Bad Batch from the get-go, because Clone Wars is massive. I think of all of the stuff other than the movies, the Clone Wars probably has the biggest fan a sort of fan base.
Right.
Yeah.
And Star Wars Rebels is kind of like the younger brother that doesn't quite get as much attention, but might actually be more talented and interesting and fun and just a better person overall. I'm a younger brother. I don't know if you could tell that.
And if you are checking out The Bad Batch today, maybe go over and check out Rebel Cells afterwards and sort of hear their take on it.
Yeah. So not today, because the episodes just dropped today. The first episode, which I think is supposed to be around 70 minutes or something like that. It's a long one. It's sort of like it's like a mini movie to introduce the series. And we'll be releasing our episode of that in a couple of days. It'll be out soon, but you can go to Rebel Cells, just search it on podcast services. It's basically everywhere. And you can subscribe there. And we have content going all the way back to 2008 when the Clone Wars series started, going all the way through Clone Wars, under our original title, which was Frontlines, the Clone Wars podcast, and then through Star Wars Rebels, through Star Wars Resistance, which was a bit of a slog. I don't really recommend that to a lot of people unless you're really hardcore into Star Wars, as well as like we've got stuff covering Forces of Destiny and some of my personal favorite stuff, which I highly recommend to everybody who's just looking to have a good time, which is Lego Star Wars, the Freemaker Adventures.
Oh, really?
Which is on Disney Plus as well.
I really love the Lego Star Wars Christmas special. I thought it was fantastic.
If you liked that, Freemaker Adventures is that on steroids. It's not this. It wasn't written by the same people, but it is in the same spirit. Freemaker Adventures was written by a group that like they are like tried and true kids comedy writers, like the whole group of them, and it is phenomenal. It's a fantastic series with great characters. You just have to turn off your canon brain and just like and just have fun and just recognize that Lego Star Wars actually kind of has its own canon that's separate from the regular Star Wars canon.
Yeah.
So Rebel Cells, go check that out. And if you have already listened to all of Rebel Cells, then maybe go check out Faster, More Intense, which is my other Star Wars podcast where we talk about the live action stuff. And if you don't like Star Wars and you'd like to hear me talk about something else from time to time, usually DC Comics and the MCU, then go subscribe to the Thunderquack podcast, which is kind of my main podcast. That's what we do sort of day in, day out on a weekly basis. But Rebel Cells only runs when there's animated content to cover. It's kind of an after show sort of thing. Like watch the episode and then come for some commentary and discussion and that sort of thing.
If you're the kind of person who likes to watch shows in order from when they started, not just watch the last episode of things, maybe you should check those out.
I'm unfamiliar with that concept.
So what do you guys know about the show? What do you guys know about Star Wars Rebels?
I'm pretty sure there's a lost or found Jedi situation going on. I feel like I somehow know that they're kind of like they're on a ship, kind of Han Solo-ish type ship. I don't know if they're like bounty hunters or something. I don't really know. I feel like maybe they're rebels. Mm-hmm.
That's a good guess. That's great instinct.
Maybe. I think that's correct.
Do you want to pinpoint where you think it takes place timeline wise in the Star Wars universe?
Ooh, I was just going to say that. I feel like it probably takes place like after the Clone Wars. I want to say.
Well, there's a lot of Star Wars that takes place after the Clone Wars, so you're safe. You're in very safe territory.
You're pretty safe, yeah. I guess there's more than half of the Star Wars.
I'm doing Price is Right rules where I'm just like, I think it's like kind of here and over.
$1.
Kind of idea. Yeah.
$1.
Yeah. I feel, because I think it's taking place where Jedis are no longer a thing. So there's like a lost, if there's a lost Jedi situation, it must be after Order 66. And then I don't know if it takes place before or after Luke, basically. I'm not too sure.
Yeah.
I'm happy to guess. I feel like there are clones in it, but I don't know. Are there clones? Don't tell me. Yeah. But are there?
I will not betray with my eyes if you are correct.
Wait. I think maybe I saw them with Princess Leia in a trailer or something, or while I was scrolling TV. Okay. Is Princess Leia in it? I'm looking at you guys on the screen.
You keep asking questions. You're not allowed to ask questions in this part.
Sorry. Yeah. Hey, I'm looking at your guys' faces, trying to gauge some reactions, and I'm getting nothing. So you guys are doing a great job.
I feel like I should probably call out that you've seen other Star Wars things.
Yes.
As well, right? You've seen the films, all of the films?
Yep, all the films.
And you've seen all of Mandalorian as well.
Yep. There's a baby in it. Baby, great actor. Oh my God, that baby. Holy shit.
Hey, I don't want to spoil anything for Star Wars Rebels, but at one point, baby.
Oh, there's baby in that too?
Yeah.
Do they get a baby voice actor though?
I don't think so. I think it's more of a soundboard situation. Okay. I think it's more of somebody just kind of hitting those keys and little baby sounds come out.
I guess that's okay. Yeah, I've seen all of Mandalorian. Have I seen other Star Wars stuff? Is there other stuff? I did mention that I read some of the young Obi-Wan Kenobi YA books when I was a teenager. I saw the Clone Wars movie where they introduce Ahsoka.
There's a baby in that one too.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's Jabba's son.
Oh, right.
Stinky.
Oh, they're so... You know, the Jabbas are good-looking folk. My God. That's
hot take. Yeah.
I read that C-3PO comic book that explains why his arm is red in that one movie.
Aren't you glad that you did, though? Because, like, without that, The Force Awakens doesn't make any sense.
It was really bothering me. I was just like, what the fuck is this?
I think a lot of people who have a problem with The Force Awakens is because they haven't read that comic book.
Yeah. Really cleared up a lot of stuff for me.
All right. Well, we're going to watch the final episode of Star Wars Rebels. If you want to watch along at home, it's available to stream on Disney Plus in Canada. And we'll be right back.
The following contains spoilers for Star Wars Clone Wars, Star Wars Rebels, Season 2 of The Mandalorian, Star Wars Legends books, The Thrawn Trilogy, and New Jedi Order, and finally Return of the Jedi. Basically, just Star Wars.
All right, well, we are back. We just watched the final episode of Star Wars Rebels. Melanie, what'd you think?
Ah! Whoa. I love watching Star Wars so much.
Oh, yeah.
It makes me feel like a little kid again. And then there's just so much stuff happens and I love it. I love every second of it.
That's the whole... I'm so glad to hear that because that's, I think, where a lot of people go wrong with Star Wars is that they want to watch it with their adult brain and it's not a serious, gritty, I want to watch Rogue One again. And it's like, no, Star Wars is for 8-year-olds. It's always been for 8-year-olds.
Yeah.
It was originally pitched to Disney and they passed on it and they've regretted it ever since.
Yeah.
They don't anymore because now they own it again.
Yeah.
But these stories are meant for kids.
Yeah.
And the kid in us. And so, yeah, I'm glad to hear that that connects for you. That
works. Absolutely. I mean, this was so much fun. It was so much fun. Should I just get started? I just want to have questions.
Go.
I have so many questions. Okay. So starts out, it's Ezra. He was the lost Jedi. I was right.
Yeah. Okay. No, not quite.
He's
no.
not right. Okay, wait. So wait, let's focus on timeline first. It is set during the time of Luke and Leia.
Yes.
But pre-Battle of Endor, after Clone Wars, because there were a bunch of clones there that had dad bods and I was really into it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dad bod Rex is a thing. It's definitely a thing.
And then Gregor, that was sad. That was sad. So I recognized that they were clones and stuff and they were like Anakin and Obi-Wan's like clone army. They had their own armies, right?
Yeah.
So yes, Rex was specifically connected to Anakin. Gregor was a Republic commando from an arc in the Clone Wars, and Commander Wolf is a little bit. It's a little more complicated. Wolf was a character created by Dave Filoni, who was the showrunner of Clone Wars and Star Wars Rebels. Wolf is Plo Koon's clone commander because each one of the Jedi has like
they all had their own clone were color coordinated and everything's great.
Wolf was Plo Koon's because Plo Koon is Dave Filoni's favorite Star Wars Jedi character, right?
That's rad.
He even got the job, he would dress up as Plo Koon. And so George Lucas had like a little stamp that he would put on things in the pre-production of like, oh, I like this piece of art, it's good to go. I like this piece of art, it's good to go. Because the artist would obviously create thousands of pieces. Mm-hmm. And he would just go through and go like, this one, make those aliens, put them in the background.
Nice.
And so he had a little stamp. I don't remember what his was, but when Dave Filoni got the job, he was like, I need a little stamp that's like my seal of approval. And his seal of approval is Plo Cool. K-O-O-L. So there's like a whole, like the fact that Wolf is there and Dave Filoni loves wolves. Like it's like,
he
smells well.
He's a walking through Wolf Moon t-shirt. Like he loves wolves.
Yeah.
So that's why you see a lot of the wolf aesthetic throughout.
Oh yeah, there's like wolf symbolism, yeah. Actual wolves.
Actual giant wolves.
Yeah.
Space
wolves. Was Plo Koon an alien Jedi?
Yes.
Yeah, Plo Koon.
You have like the gas mask, right?
Oh, the gas mask. Oh,
Plo
right.
Plo Koon was a Keldor. He was a Keldor. And so, yeah, he had like the face thing and then the little eye goggles. He was orange. Mm-hmm. I think that he shows up in The Phantom Menace for the first time. Mm-hmm. If not, he's definitely heavily featured in Attack of the Clones and then Revenge of the Sith.
Right, right.
Right.
Cool. So, Melanie, how old do you think Ezra is?
Okay. I know for a fact that he used to have better hair and I think he was smaller. Yeah. So I feel like he's grown and he's maybe like he just hit puberty or something.
No. Can I blow your mind?
Yes, blow my mind.
He is exactly the same age as Luke and Leia.
Oh.
And I mean exactly the same age. The three of them share a birthday. They're all born on Empire Day.
Wait. Is that's relevant somehow?
Well, it's relevant in terms of the timeline.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Sure.
it is in terms of like the chosen one, right? Because there's
that's what I'm thinking.
There's the prophecy of the chosen one, which Qui-Gon thought was Anakin, and there's always like ever since the prequels, there's been debate. Well, isn't the chosen one Luke? Because Luke is the one who actually brings balance to the Force. And it's like, well, does Luke bring balance to the Force? Because Anakin is the one that throws the Emperor down the pit. Sorry, spoilers for Return of the Jedi. 1983, you've had some time.
Wait, yeah. What? What happened?
If you've been watching this stuff in chronological order. So Ezra adds further sort of speculation to the idea of the Chosen Ones and sort of like the idea that the Force puts these people out into the universe when they're needed, right? And so Ezra, Luke, and Leia are all born on the same day. Presumably there are other characters that could also have been born on the same day at the same time in order to combat the rise in the darkness, which is then confirmed by the sequel trilogy when we find out, like when Snoke refers to Rey, you know, Kylo Ren, powerful light, a powerful dark, powerful light, right? A darkness rises in light to meet it.
They balance
exactly that. It's like, and he says in The Last Jedi, like I assumed when Kylo Ren grew in power that the light side would essentially react in kind,
right?
And he thought Luke, but then it ended up being Rey, right? Like there's this idea throughout Star Wars that the Force works through Force users in order to maintain balance.
Yes.
So when Palpatine won in Revenge of the Sith, the Force was like, no, we're going to fix this and created contingency plans, basically.
Right.
So there are all of these characters that connect into that. And Ezra here is important because he kind of, in the very first episode of the series, there's this idea of the spark of resistance, the spark of rebellion, which again, The Last Jedi brings that back when Holdo and Poe talk about that.
Yeah.
But the spark of rebellion, if it ignites, it'll spread like fire across the galaxy. That's the whole thing. And the story is Ezra's story from beginning to end, Star Wars Rebels, right?
Mm-hmm.
So like he is that spark.
Right.
But there are other characters that kind of come into that are important.
Yeah.
There's a very important character that's completely missing from this episode.
Kanan.
Yeah, Kanan.
Yeah, his master, yes.
He mentions him several times.
He mentions him several times. I think he's the baby daddy for that, for Hera.
Yeah,
you know, I got all of it. I got that.
And humans and Twi'leks can crossbreed. This is an important thing that everybody needs to know.
You know what? I didn't even question it. Like,
there's already precedent for it, so.
Okay, great. I was just like, I forgot that she was Twilight. I'm very multicultural stuff is like really great for me. I love it. It's part of the reason why I love Star Wars. It's that they're filling the universe with all of these different looking creatures and like people and everything. And I love that. I love that shit. So the fact they can crossbreed, chef's kiss to me, you know, love it. Okay. So he's talking about his parents. Now, his parents, were they part of starting a rebellion? Like, were they there in the first kind of episodes?
They're already gone by episode one, though, I believe.
So Ezra's been on his own for a long time. He's Space Aladdin in the first episode.
He's Space Aladdin, yes.
Like literally, he's Space Aladdin, like street rat.
They actually kind of look similar now that I think about it.
Yeah.
But if you watch the first scene of Star Wars Rebels, it's basically straight out of Aladdin. Yeah. Like, he steals the apple, and then the guy's like, how dare you?
Yeah, and then he's jumping from rooftops and stuff. He's the diamond in the rough, for sure.
Oh,
he's the Kyber crystal in the rough. But his parents were part of a resistance on Lothal to the Empire, because the Empire came in and sort of started to take over. So one of the things that you definitely miss out on just coming in at the end is the transformation of the city of Lothal, because it's the planet Lothal, and then the capital of Lothal is Lothal City,
right?
Which is where the majority of this episode took place.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And in the first season, Lothal is kind of like, you see the dome, like sort of off to one side, and it's black, and then the rest of the city is like gleaming white.
I noticed that at the end.
But then as the series went on, it sort of like the Empire asserted their control, and the city became gray and dark and gross.
Oh,
which is why it's such a payoff at the end when we see the city restored.
Imagery.
It's really good visual storytelling.
Awesome. Okay, cool. I liked that dome thing. For a second, I thought it was the Death Star, and I was like, whoa! And I was like, oh, no, it's not. Never mind.
There is a reference to the Death Star in this episode.
Ooh, is
but
there?
No, there's a very specific reference actually to Rogue One that connects into Rogue One, which is Protocol 13, which is the order to get all Imperial personnel to return to the base. Which happens in Rogue One right before the Death Star fires on Jedha for the first time,
right?
The first time the laser ever fires.
Right.
So Protocol 13 is, hey, we're about to use the Death Star to blow up this planet. Everybody get back to the base because we're going to do an evacuation.
Gotcha. Right?
So they even refer to it like, we're using the brand new Protocol 13, which has just been put into effect.
Ah.
So that tells you basically exactly where this is in the timeline.
Right.
That's really cool. I actually wrote down Protocol 13, but I did not know it had any significance whatsoever. So I'm really glad you're here.
I would not have got that.
It
at
is
all.
Definitely one. Yeah, it's one of those ones that like you got to live in this stuff in order to catch that.
Yeah,
because I'll tell you, like, I've watched this so many times, and I'm like, yeah, Protocol 13. Literally watching it this time, I was like, it's a new order. I was like, I literally just put that together for the first time watching this today.
Oh, nice. Awesome.
Nice.
But it's
okay. Fun. So, okay. How many people are in the team? Because I had trouble like putting down names and stuff. There were a lot of them.
There are six ghost team members. So the ghost is the ship, right?
Gotcha.
And the team members are called the Spectres.
Uh-huh.
So the Spectre 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Gotcha.
And then which is why at the end they're like, oh, a new member has entered Spectre 7, and that's Jason, right?
Yeah.
Jason Syndulla. Right. So yeah, there are six core members, and that's Kanan,
Hera,
Sabine. Yeah.
Either Satine, who's Obi-Wan's lover or whatever? Yes. So she's a Mandalore. She's a Mandalorian?
Yes. Yeah, she's a Mandalorian.
Okay, I love it. Great.
Oh my God, you would love Sabine so much in this series.
I didn't catch the monkey man's name.
Zeb.
Zeb.
Which is short for Gera Zeb Aurelius, but that's okay. Zeb is what they call him.
Gebazel Aurelius.
Gera Zeb Aurelius.
Okay.
It's a first name, last name, but that's
Kuzuntai. But anyways, Zeb, and then I'm guessing Ezra is part of that.
Yeah.
And then I do is the last one. The guy who had like the spikes coming out of his beard, whose friend was Melch or whatever?
Hondo Onaka? No, Hondo Onaka is a pirate.
I'm not too sure who he is then.
So the specter that you're missing is Chopper.
Oh, they include Chopper.
Yeah, he's a real he's a member of the team.
Oh my god, I love it. I liked him.
I love Chopper.
Oh. It's their little family unit. So, you may have noticed a little bit of that in this, but like it's a really big theme throughout it that they're a found family.
Yes.
Right. Kanan and Hera are the parents, their mom and dad.
Yep.
And then Zeb and Ezra are like brothers, like that whole you can have the top bunk back thing.
Yeah.
Like that's very much a brother thing. And then Sabine's kind of the sister, and then Chopper is their pet. If R2-D2 is a dog, then Chopper is a cat.
Aww.
Right, so that's sort of the personality type.
Oh,
so Chopper really likes to push things off of ledges, usually Imperial or just other droids. Like R2-D2 is like a good loyal friend.
Yes, he's a golden retriever.
Exactly, Chopper is a homicidal maniac.
Tuesday, it's Mike's cat.
There you go. Yeah,
exactly, 100%. Yes.
Oh, I love that. I've always loved how Star Wars like brings such personality to like their robots and stuff. It's great.
Chopper, interesting tidbit. He was voiced by Dave Filoni.
No.
Sabine, I have an endless amount of love for Sabine. She's my favorite character in the series. She's like an artist / Mandalorian. She's also kind of like Queen of the Mandalorians. I can't remember if I'm using the right term.
Is she related to Satine?
No, she is not related to Satine. So she's Clan Ren, which is part of House Vizsla, and that's a separate thing from in the Clone Wars. They established that there's kind of two ideologies within Mandalore. There are the old ways, which is like the warrior Death Watch Mandalorians, which is kind of what we commonly think of as Mandalorians: Boba Fett, Jango, the Mandalorian, you know, Din Djarin, and as well as Bo-Katan and all of those ones that we've seen in the Mandalorian, right? And then there was the other side of it, who were pacifists and artists. Sabine is a great character because she brings together both cultures. She is both a warrior and an artist. One of the reasons why she's such a cool character. At a certain point, she actually held the Darksaber.
Oh.
So there's a whole history there. One of the reasons why Bo-Katan doesn't want the Darksaber back in the way that I don't want to spoil Mandalorian for
you. Yeah, we can spoil Mandalorian here. It's fine.
Yeah, we'll put a spoiler warning. The Mandalorian.
One of the reasons why she's apprehensive to take it from Din Djarin and is like it has to be won in combat is that Sabine did take it in combat and then just gave it to Bo-Katan and was like, I'm not the leader of the Mandalorians. You should be the leader of the Mandalorians. Because Bo-Katan's sister was Satine.
Oh.
And Satine was previously the Duchess of Mandalore. So,
right.
Which is also why Boba Fett calls her princess, why he calls Bo-Katan princess, because she's a Duchess as well.
Right.
So there's like a whole... if you love The Mandalorian, you have to watch The Clone Wars and Rebels. You just have to. Because it's like... It's like if you like the original trilogy, then watch the prequels, right? Like, whether or not they end up being your favorite or not is irrelevant. They will enrich the thing that you already love.
Yes.
They'll add so much more. So when you go back to watch The Mandalorian, you'll be like, oh, that's that. And then beyond that, as we know, there are like 11 Star Wars projects in the works, so many of them, like 7 or 8 of them, connect back to Star Wars Rebels and the Clone Wars because they are literally about characters that originate in this. So like I saw, like when Thrawn popped up, I saw you kind of pop for that moment.
I know who he is.
Yeah. And then certainly at the end, I saw you pop for that moment as well with Ahsoka because you're like, wait, okay, now it's all making sense, right?
Yes,
like
it
all kind of came together. So that's Ahsoka's series will theoretically be a direct continuation of that those last moments.
Gotcha. And kind of like up to kind of up to the Mandalorian kind of idea.
Exactly.
No, wait. Yes.
Mandalorian takes place 5 years after the Battle of Endor.
We
don't know how long after the Battle of Endor. We're kind of jumping all over the place.
That's okay.
The final the final scene in Rebels, that like epilogue moment, we don't have confirmation exactly when it takes place.
Yeah,
it's sometime after the Battle of Endor, whether it's immediately after or a long time.
We saw that Sabine had a haircut to show that time had passed.
Yes, she's older. Yeah. She's more mature. So, she got a practical mom haircut.
Totally.
Watching this time is the first time I noticed that, because like I remember hearing after the Mandalorian episode with Ahsoka came out that Dave Filoni's like, hey, yeah, that scene at the end of Rebels actually takes place like much closer to the Mandalorian than you realize. Like he said something.
The debate right now is like, does it take place before or after? Because where we see Ahsoka in the Mandalorian isn't exactly how she appears in this, right? Like there are some things that are similar,
right?
But like definitely showing up like Gandalf the White. And there's a reason for that. That's significant to her character arc. So my guess is that what we're going to get is multiple seasons of Ahsoka. The first season of Ahsoka is going to bring us to this point in Star Wars Rebels. And then the second season of Ahsoka, like the last episode of Ahsoka season one, will probably end with Sabine joining that show, and then season two will be about them going to find Ezra,
and it's Rosario Dawson.
We touched on a lot there. I just want to go back a minute.
Sorry.
I love Sabine Wren. She's my favorite character. She is the most punk rock Star Wars character. She changes her hair color all the time, like from season to season, and she's like
Ramona Flowers.
She has the spray paint and graffiti esque feeling to her.
I really loved how Thrawn had some of her art.
Yes.
Well, that's and I was like, oh, okay.
That's also a pretty big comment on Thrawn too. He's always been like an art fan, art critic, even before. I guess we'll get into that in a minute. But I love Sabine. She's great. Ezra, not as much. Not a big fan of Ezra. He's a bit whiny through most of the series.
He's a kid.
Really, he's kind of a bit of a he's a teenager. He's an annoying teenager. Overall, this cast of characters is kind of what separates Rebels from Clone Wars quite a bit, because you have like a consistent group of people that you can sort of grow attached to over time. Whereas Clone Wars is an anthology series. It sort of jumps all over the place with a bunch of different characters, which is fun, but you don't really get that same connection to the characters as much.
I guess. I don't really know what Clone Wars is, and now I don't want to really talk about it because I definitely want to watch it so that I can complete get my Star Wars patch and have seen everything. You know,
if this final episode of Star Wars Rebels is somewhat difficult to follow because of all of the threads and everything, and then it mostly ends up just being action sequences, the final episode of Clone Wars is pointless to watch without having watched the rest of the series.
Okay, fair.
Absolutely pointless. Yeah. Because the final episode of Clone Wars, like the one that they just released last year, that it literally actually a year ago to the day that this episode is being released, it's literally just action and then a very emotional scene at the very end that if you don't have a connection to the character of Ahsoka Tano,
you just
don't care.
Okay.
Like I can't imagine anybody would be like, wow, that was really meaningful. You have to have a connection to that character.
Mike, I think it's decided we can't do Clone Wars.
I mean, I already kind of decided to do Rebels instead because Yeah,
again, I'm saying we could have done both, and now we're I'm vetoing it. Okay.
Okay, that sounds fair.
The problem with Clone Wars is that it's structured differently, where they're not really episodes; they're structured into arcs, right?
For like different Jedis and their
And the final episode of Clone Wars is the fourth part of a four-part arc, right? So you would really want to watch those final four episodes in order to be able to like come back and be like, let's talk about that. Because if you just watch the last one, 10 minutes of it is them falling out of the sky. Like, that's not even a joke. Like, that's literally a thing.
This show, Dessert Before Breakfast, is all about saving time. So we're not going to be watching four episodes. That's nuts. Sure. But yes. Okay, sorry. So let's jump back to Rebels, because we're nerding out so much that it's just like overlapping everything. And I love it.
No, it's so hard.
Sorry. Let's talk about Thrawn, because I noticed a few things about Thrawn. I recognize his character. I don't really know much about him. I didn't know that he was super into art, but I loved that he was. What was up with his mask thing? Because it seemed important. They didn't really touch on it, except they had it in frame several times.
That's a Jedi Temple Guard.
Gotcha. Mask. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So he was taunting. I get it. Another thing, his Star Destroyer had like a really sweet decal.
Yeah.
Is that like...
It's called, his Star Destroyer is called the Chimera. Thrawn is a unique character in Star Wars because the Emperor is a racist asshole.
Oh yeah, totally. Right? They're all human and they're all white. Yeah.
Only white men. White men. White men with clipped British accents, right? Those are the only people that he trusts. Because he knows that they are also equally as asshole-ish, right? So it's like you can't trust people who live in the gray area. You can only trust people who are equally as evil as you.
Right.
And so that's symbolized in Star Wars by like, hey, they're all colonialists, like they're all just British imperialist, like we just conquer things,
right?
But Thrawn is an alien.
Yeah, he's blue.
He's a Chiss, right? Not only that, the Chiss come from the unknown regions.
Yeah,
so he is literally from outside of the Star Wars, like the known Star Wars galaxy, right? So he's almost like, wow, I guess I'm going to go here with this. I can. My last name's Cohen. It's okay. He's like a Jewish person that would work for the Nazis.
Oh, okay.
You know what I mean? Yeah, yeah. Like he's kind of like a race traitor sort of thing. Mm-hmm, it's like, like Thrawn, Palpatine would not like let the Chiss be a part of his empire, because like he would subjugate them for sure. He would use them.
Right.
But it's like, Thrawn being Grand Admiral Thrawn is weird.
Right.
It's an oddity, and it's an oddity because Palpatine knows just how useful Thrawn is, and there are many, many reasons.
Well, I mean, it already shows how smart he is just by, you know, outmaneuvering Ezra and the gang and basically saying, you think you've won? Actually, I'm winning. And then like forcing their hand and everything. Like, it was just a really smart play, and it was it showed a lot in his character. I really liked him. He was great.
It's probably worth at least touching upon like the meta element of Thrawn being in the show at all.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, because I don't know if you know, like before Star Wars had an extended universe, there was a book series that came out in like the early 90s called The Heir to the Empire. It was like the first major step into that universe, and it starred Admiral Thrawn as like a new villain post. Like, it was the first story to take place after Return of the Jedi, I want to say.
Yep.
Was he on the cover? Because I'm pretty sure that's why I recognize him. Yeah.
Yes, he was. Yeah. But then, of course, when Disney took over, they killed the extended universe, and everyone's like, no, but I love all those things in the extended universe. Oh. And Thrawn was one of the first things that they brought back into the new universe as like a new character, like not necessarily the old stories still aren't canon, but it's like, this is a character we're just gonna
pull him in,
bring him into this show. Yeah.
Okay.
And here's the thing. I'll get hate for this, because so many people love the Thrawn trilogy. They love Heir to the Empire and all that stuff.
Oh, here it comes.
I hate Timothy Zahn's writing. It is, in my opinion, insulting to anyone who is even remotely intellectual. because he writes these characters like Thrawn, mm-hmm. who, like, everything you said about Thrawn in this episode of Star Wars Rebels is absolutely accurate. Mm-hmm. There is an idea that that comes from the Zahn books, but there is nothing in the Zahn trilogy that introduces this character that actually supports that Thrawn is a genius or a strategic mastermind. It is all one thing. There are scenes in the books where he's playing chess. He's playing made up Star Wars pretensies chess, mm-hmm. with Captain Pelion, who gets referenced in this episode. And Pelion is like he's been a part of the Empire since the Clone Wars, basically. He's old hat at it, and he is himself like a strategic, like he's like a whatever. He's high ranking. He's great at stuff in his own right, but he can never beat Thrawn because Thrawn's always five steps ahead of him. So this chess analogy is the only explanation that we ever get in those three books for why Thrawn is able to predict the actions of Luke, Han, and Leia at every turn. Every other character in that trilogy is subject to his whims because we were told early on in the first book that he's really good at chess. So he's always five steps ahead. So then throughout the rest of it, it's just like, so everybody's like, Thrawn's a mastermind, but there's nothing in evidence for it. It doesn't actually play out. It's just Luke comes out of hyperspace at one point and Thrawn's ship is already there.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's like, oh my God, how did he know he was going to be here? And then Pelion's like, he's always five steps ahead. And you're like, that's not an answer. That's not an answer. So I can't stand those books. I find them really annoying. They do introduce Thrawn. They introduce Mara Jade. They introduce Pelion. They introduce Talon Card. Like there are a million characters that get introduced in those books that are all fantastic characters, but they're fantastic characters in spite of the story that they're in.
Right.
And especially because of the continuing stories in the Star Wars expanded universe. Mm-hmm. So these other than Thrawn, because he dies, but like these characters are beloved by the fandom and everybody's just kind of waiting for a lot of them to come back. I like post Disney merger.
Yeah.
So Thrawn was the first one that really got brought back. And the great thing is that we have so much more time with him and it's in a story that's not beholden to bulletproof characters like the three leads from Star Wars, right?
Right.
We're like, well, we can't kill Luke, Han, or Leia, or Chewie, or anybody, like, until later. Chewie dies much later, but yeah. But with Star Wars Rebels, our core cast is kind of safe for the majority of the series, but there are a lot of like tertiary characters and stuff like that. It's like, well, are they safe? Right.
Right.
So
yeah, no, the cast was huge.
Yeah. Thrawn was able, and it was like, there's more characters that didn't make it as far. Right.
Right. Right.
Like we noticed like Kanan's absence is noted.
Because yes, absolutely.
Five episodes before this met his end. So like Thrawn was a real threat and he was actually terrifying. And like when they introduced him, I was kind of like, I really don't want this. Mm-hmm. But then like they won me over. And I think a massive part of that is Lars Mikkelsen, who voices Thrawn, who just like crushes it as a villain.
Oh, yeah.
He's so good.
100%. His voice and his presence and everything were powerful. It was great.
Yeah.
He was really good.
So he's Mads Mikkelsen's brother. He's got that Hannibal vibe going
now. Yeah. I understand.
Exactly. Got a pedigree.
I read the Heir to the Empire trilogy and did enjoy it. I don't know if I would enjoy it now, but I did enjoy it as a kid.
And I think you just answered that. I did enjoy it as a kid. And then I've never gone back to see if I would actually enjoy it as an adult, right?
Some things just don't age well, you know? Mm-hmm.
But I think that people get the rose-colored glasses, and I think that when you experience something as a kid, it can kind of stick with you, and then you're like, well, that's how I feel. Yeah. And I didn't read it as a kid, so I think that's one of the reasons why the Zahn stuff just doesn't do it for me. He's written stuff since then. He's gone back, and like basically they reintroduced Thrawn, so they gave Zahn a, it's amazing. Thrawn Zahn. It's almost like he just wrote himself into his stories. I hate self-insert characters. So it's one of those things where it's like, and he's the smartest character in all of Star Wars. And he literally has like omnipotent knowledge of the character's actions. It's almost like he's the author. So I just wonder why I don't vibe with him.
I mean, at the time though, and granted, this was like, I guess before, like there's a bunch of shows and a bunch of other stuff. Like the thing that really struck me is like, oh, this is a villain that doesn't have magical powers, AKA the Force. And he is able to be intimidating in a different way. And that's kind of what I sort of latched onto and really appreciate. And now there's no shortage of that in Star Wars. But at the time it was new.
Yeah.
As a concept.
He's a, he's like a Lex Luthor type.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, very much.
Yes, absolutely. Like
against, against Superman.
The problem is that the person writing him has to be as smart as Lex Luthor or as smart as Thrawn.
Ooh.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's a tall order.
Yeah, when you have a writer's room, I think that's easier. Mm-hmm. So I think on a TV series, it's easier to write those characters as evil geniuses because you've got six people that can all go around and go like, but how would he know that? Right. And then you can actually figure it out because you can bounce it off of other people. Mm-hmm. But if you got to sit and write a movie by yourself or you're writing a novel by yourself, I think it's harder. And I think it's easier to fall in the trap of shortcutting and being like, he's smart because he's smart.
He just knows because reason.
Yeah, exactly. Because the plot dictates it. Right?
Because he looked at some art and was like, I know what this person's going to do because of their art.
Okay. Star Wars Rebels, right? Okay. Let's get back to it.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's get back into it.
Okay, so the governor lady, the Price.
Yeah,
she was cool. I admired her by the end of it to like kind of stick with her guns, even if her guns were poorly placed, and then she died right after. She seemed cool. The little monkey guy, who was he? Thrawn's
Rook. Yeah.
Rook.
So another character. That comes from I'm not directly from the Thrawn stuff, but there's a planet I can't remember any of this stuff. There's a planet in those stories that like Vader came and he like conquered the planet, and so everybody on that planet like worships Darth Vader.
Rad.
And and then Leia shows up at one point and they're like, oh, we know that you're the daughter of Vader. We worshipped him. Now we worship you. So the Nogri, I think they're called the Nogri. I think that's what the species is. They basically like pledge themselves to Leia, who at that point is the leader, one of the leaders of the New Republic, right?
Right, right.
So she's like, well, this is perfect. Now we can use all of these incredible warriors in order to like fight back against bad guys, right? Mm-hmm, so they end up like basically as her like personal bodyguards.
Aww.
That stuff's all wiped out, obviously, right?
Oh,
that,
right,
that's,
okay.
That's legend stuff.
It's so not that's, real anymore.
Yeah, so it's not canon anymore. But one of the ways that they brought that in is that Rook is one of these characters. He is one of these Nogri. The fun thing there is that he's voiced by Warwick Davis,
aww,
who is Wicket from Return of the Jedi.
Yes.
Who is also in basically every Star Wars movie from Return of the Jedi 4.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? I think he actually has the distinction of being the most Star Wars characters because he's Wicket, he's Rook, he's that I forget his name, but he's a character that he's in The Phantom Menace hanging out with Watto during the pod race.
Yes, yeah.
That character is the same character that he plays in Solo, who is part of the Windriders with Enfys Nest.
Okay.
So he's actually the same guy in both of those. It's like the Empire rose and then he was like, screw the Empire because they're taking away our freedom. So we went from being a bad guy that hangs out with Watto to being a freedom fighter, sort of like proto rebellion type of character.
Very nice.
And then he's also like he's a bunch of characters.
Was he also in the Ewok movies, like the follow-up movie?
Yeah, he played and he was a kid back then. Like he was literally a child
right
when he played Wicket back in those movies.
Yeah. It's a good thing you're here.
I
don't know.
I feel like we'd probably be done if it was anybody but me.
We'd have
wrapped up.
I'm loving all of this information.
Yeah.
Okay, so Lothal. Okay, Protocol 13. Okay, it was at this point that I thought I saw plans for the Death Star, but it was just the dome, and I freaked out for no reason. Thrawn, sweet decal. I just loved that he had his own aesthetic. That was amazing. I like how, what he said about morally correct and versus strategically sound. Just very, what a great monologue. It was such a great monologue. Okay, let's talk about Emperor Palpatine, or MP, as I like to call him.
So first question for you, Melanie.
Yeah.
Do you think that this is a good voice match or the actual guy?
I think it's a good voice match.
You are incorrect.
It is Ian McDiarmid.
No, really?
Yeah. You know why it's Ian McDiarmid?
Why?
Because the guy who voiced him passed away like just prior to this.
Oh.
Yeah. So Ian Abercrombie, who people might remember from a great episode of Seinfeld. I mean, several episodes of Seinfeld. He was Elaine's boss. The episode that I always reference is the Hitler one, right? When they're annexing the water company, and he has his speech, and the pen explodes, and then he touches his lip, and he's got the and then he's got the Hitler mustache and ink on his lip, and he says,
actually very funny, but we just did Seinfeld for dessert before breakfast.
Oh, okay.
So I've also not seen any of it except for the last episode.
Listeners will know what I'm talking about because other people who've seen Seinfeld. So yeah, Ian Abercrombie voiced Palpatine for the majority of the Clone Wars. And then he passed away before season 5 because in season 5, Tim Curry actually takes up the role.
Rad.
I did not know that.
Now, Tim Curry, his health was sort of declining, right?
Yeah.
And so he had retired at some point between doing the voice for the Clone Wars and then them needing Palpatine to come back for Star Wars Rebels. So they got Ian McDiarmid back to voice Palpatine for Star Wars Rebels.
Oh my gosh. I just didn't think it was plausible that he would do it. I just thought that they would have brought a voice actor in. Yeah, yeah. But that's really cool that they brought...
That's Disney money for you, man.
Yeah, dead Disney money, though. that's really cool. Oh, that's great.
It was probably, timeline-wise, it was probably at the beginning of them talking to him about coming back for Rise of Skywalker.
Right, yeah.
So that's looking back in hindsight, it's like, that was probably like, hey, we think we're going to put Palpatine in this movie. Can you come back and do this show too? Right.
Right.
Sort of thing.
They just put it in the contract, like very small.
I'd have to look exactly at the timeline, but I think that this makes sense.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, can I just say that Emperor Palpatine animated is just not my cup of tea?
Oh, really?
He's not hot. He's not hot at all.
He's not hot. Is he supposed to be hot?
Do you find him hot in live action?
I mean, he's got something going on, at least before his face gets like lightninged, right? Yeah, before the melty thing.
Yeah, all melted. Somehow it melts and gets bumpier at the same time.
Yeah, it's like it ages him considerably.
Yeah.
I didn't know that lightning would do that to a person, but here we are, right? But even when he was like animated to not look all gross and old, it was still like kind of gross and old. And I wasn't. It was weird. I don't know if you saw me, but I actually shockingly looked at the thing. And I was like, oh,
no. Yeah, I noticed. Okay.
But yeah, when he first showed up, I was confused because he wasn't looking like his old scraggly self. I was like, oh fuck, I thought I had it down like the timeline, but now I'm confused again about what the hell is going on. And then it turns out it was all just a mirage.
Yep.
And Emperor Palpatine is an interesting guy just because anytime he talks, it's like, okay, this person is obviously evil. I don't understand why anyone is listening to him. He's like, you deserve it. Go over there and get your family back. Like, he might as well be twiddling a mustache, you know, like how evil it is.
You know, but we live in a post-Trump world now where like...
That's actually a good point,
actually.
Right? Like, you don't even have to be smart and evil in order to be charismatic enough to trick people into doing things that don't serve their own self-interest, right? Like it's staggering to me. Like, I totally agree with you. It's like, Palpatine's evil, guys. like I don't know if any of you noticed this, like, from the beginning. Like, yeah,
this guy.
But yeah, it's like, I mean, like, I think that George Lucas was very prescient in that.
Yeah,
like that he was like, look, if you tell people, if you just tell them, you don't even have to be convincing. If you just tell them that giving up their securities and safety, or their securities and freedoms in exchange for safety, like, that's what you're doing, like, they will just hand it over.
Right.
Because, like, you just play on people's fear. Right. And so Palpatine, I think, in this is very much trying to do the same thing.
Oh, totally.
Like, it's that, like, it's even more effective if you've been with Ezra this whole time, because he's already lost his parents.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Like, I mean, the first scene is him talking to their to their holo photo or whatever.
Yeah.
And speaking to them out loud in the ship full of people. So they all heard him, you know, like, yeah, it was very clear that his parents were very important to him. So this was definitely something that could be used against him in a way, as the Sith do, you know?
Yeah. So this is a really interesting thing that you stumbled across, Melanie. Like, how exactly do you think the mechanism would work for him to see his parents again? Like, what did you think that thing did?
I thought that it's like some sort of trap. He's going to get trapped in there if he goes in there, kind of idea, or it's going to open a wormhole to hell or something. I don't know. Like, I was just like, this, whatever's it going to happen if he does this, it's going to be bad. Like, you cannot trust them. You cannot trust the Sith. You know, and Palpatine's evil. And again, he was like, he was behind Ezra, so we got to see his face, and he was being all sneaky and stuff. So I don't know the mechanics of what was going to happen if he went in there, but something bad was going to happen.
This is probably the most surprising thing about Rebels for me. This element that shows up in the very last season of Rebels. Do you want to take this away, Michael?
Yeah, it actually doesn't show up for the first time in the very last season of Rebels. It actually shows up in the Clone Wars for the first time.
Oh, really? Okay.
Mike, you're not nerd enough.
So yeah, that opening, that portal is an opening to like a direct opening into the cosmic force, but it's called the World Between Worlds. That's the sort of what it's referenced as in that episode. It's actually the title of the episode where we first see it. But it is much like Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, a space between spaces. It's sort of a world off to the side of the corporeal. And it's the cosmic force. So within it, it appears differently to people at different times, but to Ezra earlier in this season, it essentially was a series of pathways, Escher-esque pathways that like sort of folded in on themselves and circled around and didn't make any sense in terms of a physical space. At the end of all of these pathways were these different portals to different times and places. Mm-hmm. And he used it previously, like in this moment, in that moment, to actually save Ahsoka from dying, because we had seen her in season two and we thought that she was dead at the end of season two. But in fact, Ezra had managed to save her from dying. So that's where the Gandalf the White sort of metaphor with Ahsoka comes in, is that she faced the Balrog and we all thought she was dead.
The east, bro.
Exactly. Yeah, so that just happened, but in that story, this episode happens right after Kanan dies. Kanan was Ezra's master.
Yeah.
And obviously a father figure to him. And he'd already lost one father, so he was like, I can get him back.
Right.
And it, like, that whole episode was kind of about, like, no, you actually shouldn't do these, like, Ahsoka saying to him, you shouldn't do these things. And then Palpatine shows up in that one, too.
He said, do it.
Palpatine's been trying to access the World Between Worlds. He's been trying to access the cosmic force so that he can manipulate things even more than he already is, right? Because obviously Palpatine has some sort of vision, like he has some extra ability to see into the future that most Jedi don't,
right?
Which also brings up the idea of like different Jedi have different aptitudes, mm-hmm. right? Not all of them can do the same things. They have like a pool of abilities that they all have access to, but some are better than others.
Yeah, it depends how they spread their stats, for sure.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, there are different classes. There are subclasses within Jedi.
Yeah, for sure,
right?
Absolutely.
There's Jedi Guardian, there's Jedi Consular, there's Jedi, right? There are different skill sets. So
Long story short, Star Wars has time travel now, or apparently did since the Clone Wars. I missed that part, but
so the connection into the Clone Wars is Mortis, which they reference in Star Wars Rebels as well.
Okay,
so Mortis is a planet that Anakin, Obi-Wan, and Ahsoka go to at one point.
Family trip,
and I don't want to spoil it because there's some really cool stuff that happens there.
Right.
But it kind of happens, but also doesn't happen. It's kind of, because it's kind of in this otherworldly place. And then at the end, what we originally thought was the end of the Clone Wars, actually what we thought was the end of the Clone Wars the second time, because the series has ended three times.
So
the second time we thought it was done, the Netflix stuff, what we call the Lost Missions, Yoda goes to a different place, which is a different kind of world between worlds, and he has some visions, which is in there to retcon and sort of explain why he makes some of the decisions that he makes in Revenge of the Sith.
Right.
Namely, Palpatine punches him a bunch and hits him with a thing, and then he goes, I just give up. I'm going to go into exile now.
I'm going to leave.
And you're like, well, maybe you could have just like regrouped with Obi-Wan and then like sought out the other Jedi and then come back. But it, you know, but then the Clone Wars is like, no. Yoda kind of knew before this happened that this was about to happen, even all of the stuff with Anakin, and he kind of just lets it happen, which actually turns out that Yoda's kind of a dirtbag.
Just a little bit.
As a result. But it's also sort of like he just sort of resigns himself to the fact that they've already made their mistakes and that nothing he does at that point is going to
fix
be
it.
Enough yeah. to turn the ship. Right. Ship's too big, right? It's too big. Late.
Okay. Yeah, so it's like an access to time travel / parallel universe type situation. But Ezra can access it, but Palpatine can't.
There was a temple on Lothal that was an entry point. There are other entry points throughout the galaxy. But the temple on Lothal was a very literal portal that he was able to open and go into the world between worlds.
Right.
But then after he came out, he destroys it. So it's kind of weird because you kind of go like, well, did you guys not know that you were going to destroy the temple? Like, why is this other part of it on the ship? Like you guys, they kind of wrote themselves into a weird corner of like, well, we destroyed the temple four episodes earlier. And it's like, mm-hmm. Then why did you destroy the temple four episodes earlier?
Palpatine's a Jedi and he's got money in the bank. He just brought it all back on the ship, so it's perfect.
But it's not even the same part of the temple that Ezra used to go into the world between worlds. So it's like it's the one part in this episode where I'm like.
It's like, you can do this again, right? Probably.
Yeah. You guys are kind of stretching it a little bit, but I'll allow it because it's a nice moment for the character.
I personally will allow this to happen.
I don't know if you guys know, but I'm a big deal in the Star Wars online community.
I kind of feel that.
That comes with some weight.
You mentioned that you've seen.
You're like a fan. I feel like you like Star Wars.
Just a tiny, tiny bit.
Just a bit. So basically through the portal, Ezra sees his parents and he is tempted to go through and save them, which hasn't occurred to him before or has.
Well, he wasn't in the portal before. Yeah.
Oh,
well, because like Michael said, it was the other one was destroyed and then this one was just sort of brought up and then he's like, oh, here's a portal again. Do you want to do this? He's like, oh, and then he thought about it and then he didn't.
Look at me. I'm Emperor Palpatine in my white robes, and I'm definitely going to help you.
Yeah.
So after that, there's a cut to the people at the ship, not like the rebel squad kind of infiltrating that base. They're like the ones waiting. They're the getaway drivers, I guess. I don't know what was really going on.
Yeah.
So they wake up. And then the small boy is basically like, oh, it's exactly as Ezra said. And I'm like, fuck Ezra then for not telling everybody that this might happen. I hate it when they do that.
He had one of those. It's one of those Doctor Strange moments where it's like, well, he's seen all of the futures. He knows.
Yeah.
Because he says it. He says it later on in the episode. He's like, there were a bunch of different paths and I knew that this was the one that I had to take. So it's like you kind of get the sense he foresaw a few different ways that this could go, and mm-hmm. one of them involved not telling anybody the plan.
Right. Still
mm-hmm.
a dick move, but anyway. So they initiate like they start sending frequency zero.
Yeah,
they start sending that through. No, and then again, there's the tease of like, oh well, it's not so much of a who, but a what, and I'm like, ah, fuck you too. Jumps to like back on the ship, and then there, I just noticed at that point that like they're about to go and like retake the powers and the supply or whatever they're going to go
the shield generator.
Yeah, the shield generator. Thank you. You're a nerd, and that's great. so they're going to go get the shield generator or whatever, and then it was at that point that I wrote down in my notes. A lot of representation in Rebel Squad, and I was really digging it.
Yeah.
A lot of aliens, a lot of New Zealanders. Very good. All the clones.
Yeah, it's one of the reasons why so many of the angry man babies on YouTube hate Star Wars Rebels, mm-hmm. is because, like you're not allowed to put women in your shows, apparently. It's a really big thing right now because they just announced Indiana Jones 5 that Phoebe Waller-Bridge is going to be in Indy 5 and all of the headlines say female lead. And so a bunch of man babies on YouTube that are mad at Lucasfilm because of Rey, because Han Solo gave the Millennium Falcon to a girl. they're all so mad that Phoebe Waller-Bridge is going to be in Indiana Jones 5. And it's like, hold up. Are any women allowed to be in Indiana Jones 5? Or should it just be an absolute sausage fest?
Michael, I don't know if you know this. Women actually don't exist.
Oh.
Women are not real.
Yeah.
That's my bad.
Yeah.
That's my bad.
I am a figment of your imagination.
It's just mass psychosis on the part of beta males, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, okay.
Got it.
I have seen a YouTube video that talks about why Ezra is better than Sabine as a character, and it made me so mad. It's also
irrelevant because better is subjective, and one existing does not negate the other. So that representation angle was a big thing with Star Wars Rebels when they announced these characters initially, where it was like, wait, there's a girl Mandalorian. Wait, there's a Twi'lek lady that flies the ship. I'm not watching this show.
Whose name is Hera, who's literally the queen of the gods. And I loved her so much. So bossy, and I loved it.
Oh, she's fantastic.
There is a YouTube video of the amount of screen time that women have in the original Star Wars trilogy that aren't Princess Leia, and it is a minute long.
Mike, women don't exist. They're just not there in the Star Wars universe. They don't. You know who? You know the Sarlacc pit? That was a woman.
Really? I missed that symbolism.
Yeah. No. The tentacles grabbing at men. Yeah, that's a woman for sure. Eating them, 100% female, right there.
Just a great big gaping hole in the desert.
Yes.
What's that?
Oh no! So bad.
All right.
Okay. Sorry. It's oh yes. It was at this point that I also like not only the representation, but like everybody was really sassy, and I really enjoyed that. Just like the way that they played off of each other is, it's just like a very tiny bit of dialogue that shows how well like they know each other, or like they're like, you know, they're still kind of having fun, even though it's a really tense or serious situation. They're still fighting and everything. They seemed really great. I wanted to be friends with them. Melch got shot and I almost cried because I loved him so much. Turned out to be fake, though, so don't worry, he's fine. But he was really cute. I don't know what his deal was, but he reminded me of, like, when I played Jedi Knight, there were those little piggy people who were, like, engineers or whatever, and he reminded me of one of those guys.
Ugnaughts. Mm-hmm. They're called Ugnaughts, when we see them in Empire Strikes Back on the on Cloud City, dismantling, taking the pieces of C-3PO.
But, like, Melch is really cute. Like, really cute.
Well, and another Ugnaught is, I just blanked on his name.
What are you here for, Michael?
Yikes.
No, I'm kidding.
Mandalorian.
Oh, yeah. The guy, I have spoken.
Yeah.
I got Star Wars Rebels on the brain is the reason.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I'm just teasing you. It's all good.
Yeah, no, you're knocking out of the park so much.
Oh, on any given day, any specific character from Queel is the character in Mandalorian. Yeah, any given character can just fall out of my head because there's just too many of them.
There's a lot of them, and that's so cool. Fine. Yeah. I will admit that when I played Jedi Knight, I may have killed a lot of those Ugnaughts.
Yeah, we all did.
If they had looked like Melch, I would not have done it because they cute.
Yeah, those low poly versions definitely aren't as cute.
Yeah, there's something about like that very sharp features, literal sharpness. Not that great. Cool. Then Zed finally attacks the Rook guy.
Yeah,
that was again heart wrenching. I didn't know if he had died or not. Gregor gets shot. So basically, shit was hitting the fan at this point, and everything was looking really bad.
No one is safe.
Yes. Yeah. Because there were so many characters, I also didn't realize who was kind of the main character apart from Ezra. So I was like, oh, like all of these people could be dead. Like, to me, I didn't know.
There were three clones, so you know one of them wasn't going to make it through, right?
Well, at least one of them. Yeah.
It's not going to be. Rex is going to be fine because Rex is like our number one clone. So
I will admit that when Rex and Gregor had that moment, I was like, kiss
yourself.
That's
interesting.
So everyone was getting shot, and that was like really scary for me because again, I didn't really know who was main cast and who was extra. Obviously a clone was gonna die, like it's gonna happen. And then there's all the shit went down with Emperor Palpatine and Ezra. So Ezra made his choice. Obviously, he chose to not open the portal or whatever. Palpatine was very mad. And then that's when his like, for some reason, the temple falling down affected the hologram. And then instead of being a guy in he redid his face and like was wearing a white robe. He changed over to the Palpatine we all know and love and hate.
So you have to assume that whatever deep fake process he was doing was happening on the client side as opposed to the server side.
Yeah. Right? Makes sense.
And that was his mistake is that when they engineered that, they were like, well, I think, you know, like you're across the galaxy. I think that we'll probably save ourselves some lag if we do the rendering on our end.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so when the temple collapses, it's like, well, the holo projectors are now compromised.
Yeah.
So it makes sense.
Yeah. No,
it's, as long as you're willing to do the homework to make it make sense.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I just love the idea of Emperor Palpatine, like working with some guy being like, actually, could you make my, like, could you just tuck my face a little bit so that it's nice and tight and then like de-age me like 10, 15 years, maybe. Yeah.
Well, they have hundreds of hours of him being hollow projected across the galaxy.
Absolutely.
Because he was the Supreme Chancellor for a lot longer than he was legally supposed to be.
Yes.
Right. So, you know, they had that technology. They had the, you can't trust a hologram in Star Wars, though.
Totally.
That's what it tells you.
Yeah.
So Ezra attempts to make his escape, and then the red guard comes out with their sticks, and they look like ninjas. and then they also like point the sticks at Ezra, and then there's like, do they have kyber crystals as well? Is that what that is?
It's super unclear what those sticks are. Like that's like a new thing. Those are just a plot device.
I was like, what techno magic is this that they can like make him fly or whatever?
Those characters were in the Return of the Jedi too, right?
So the Crimson Guards are in Return of the Jedi, but we never see what's under their cloaks.
Right.
Unfortunately, because apparently what's under their cloaks is this badass armor that they wear. but that the armor that we see them in this episode is a bit of a reference to Crimson Empire, which is a comic book series that's in the Legends canon. So it's not exact because like there's like a whole thing with that, but But it's kind of like it's an inspired by thing. So it's like, hey, if they took off those cloaks, what you would see underneath is that they have rad battle armor for when they are actually going to fight. But when they're guarding the Emperor in Return of the Jedi, it's like they don't ropes. Need to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. Cause we saw that in the Clone Wars as well. Cause we saw blue versions of those in the Phantom Menace that follow the Supreme Chancellor. Right.
Yes.
That are like a visual reference to the Crimson Guards. And then in Clone Wars, we see one of those guys in battle, and he actually voiced by James Marsters, Spike from Buffy, and he's got like full armor like a clone trooper. So it's kind of they're kind of like referencing three different things in that moment.
Nice.
And the staffs are just kind of like a weird like, hey, we need to have a plot device for why Ezra doesn't just murder these guys within 5 seconds.
For sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. So Ezra escapes kind of. No, he's like still on the ship, but he like makes his way to the front of the ship where they drive or whatever. The team down at the base managed to get the shield back up and prevent some, you know, a huge disaster from happening. And then Frequency Zero finally comes to fruition. And it is the most amazing thing I've ever seen. It's the space whales.
Yeah.
Yes.
They're space whales.
Yes.
So I saw Solo. And when I saw the space whale in that, I was underwhelmed and I was not happy with it. I was just like, this is...
I totally forgot that was a thing in Solo until you mentioned it just now.
I was just like, oh yeah, there's a space whale. Of course there's a space whale.
Well, that one's more of a space kraken.
Oh, sorry.
Than a space whale, yeah, right? Because you're talking about inside the maw.
Well, excuse me, okay? No,
it's a slight distinction because the Purgles, which is what show up in this, they do have tentacles.
Right.
But they are... the creature inside the maw, I don't remember what it's called, but the creature inside the maw is like just an animal that just like attacks. Whereas the Purgle.
Yeah. Were they self-aware? Is it like, were they knew what was going on?
Yeah. So they were introduced in season 2, in a one-off episode. It's the only time that we ever saw them. But there was like a whole thing of like, there was this mining colony and they were mining this gas, for hyperfuel. It was disrupting the Purgle's environment, basically, because we find out by the end of it that the Purgle basically eat this gas in order to convert it so that they can jump through hyperspace.
Oh.
And the idea is that like the Purgles are how we discover hyperspace lanes.
Oh.
Like in ancient times, like whoever first came up with hyperspace travel, they did it by following the example of the Purgles, figuring out how they did it and then following their hyperspace lanes. Ugh. And then like, so there's a little bit of like an environmental angle here.
Nice.
The other thing is that like Ezra in season 1, it's implied very heavily that he has a deep connection to animals.
Mm.
That's sort of like for every Jedi kind of has a gift.
Yeah.
Right. Like has a very specific thing that they're very good at.
That's why the wolf listened to him.
Yep. Exactly.
Yeah. And so like Ezra has this connection with animals and he can sense what they're thinking. And when he connects with the Purgles in that episode, it's more than in previous ones, he like could control animals or he could like suggest things to them in the way that other Jedi can suggest to humans. Right.
Right. Right. Right.
But when he connects with the Purgles, there's more there. He's like, it's like the idea being that they're whales, just like when we, it's Free Willy, right? Like when we look in the eye of an orca whale, we're like, that thing's thinking. It's like that animal is self-aware. It's conscious. Right.
So they come like knowingly to help him kind of idea.
Gotcha. Whatever frequency he sent out, it was like a specific call to them of like, hey, it's Ezra, come help.
Okay.
The thing is that we only saw the smaller Purgle in that episode.
Oh, there are bigger ones?
Well, the ones that show up at the end are the gigantic ones, are these massive Purgle that destroy the ships, right?
Right.
And I think maybe we saw one in that episode at the end or something, but like we really just kind of see the small Purgle in that episode.
Yeah.
Wow.
And they're kind of considered pests because they're responsible for like for accidents in hyperspace lanes and stuff like that. Like people hit them and then their ships explode, right? When it's really like by the end of the episode, we come away from it like, well, actually we're the ones doing the damage.
Yeah,
like
people, for sure.
Actually, humans are the virus, right?
Yeah.
If we can speak of it in an analogy.
Right. Okay, cool. So then he basically, Thrawn is held down by these Purgles. I didn't know they were called that. That's cool. And he makes the choice to stay there while the Purgles go off into hyperspace. Now, yeah. I'm guessing that the Force basically told him to do that because there seemed to be ample time to leave.
Yeah, I think the implication is that he is... They need him there in order to sort of like coordinate it. Like he's again, let's reference some other non-canon EU stuff, but battle meditation is a thing in Star Wars,
yeah,
where like a single Jedi is able to coordinate other forces and make them more efficient. And the idea here, I think,
pretty
is
pretty sure
that,
Naruto
like,
did it first, but that's okay.
Knights of the Old Republic predates Naruto, okay, but that's okay. Let's just say that they were parallel lines of thought. So I think that the idea there, because what we see right before they jump, he uses the Force, like he's sort of projecting the Force, and we see all the glass.
Yeah, I was wondering about that because, like, okay. First of all, the glass was broken, so if he went into hyperspace, I was like, oh, is he going to die? Because there's going to be, like, nothing, there's going to be no oxygen or whatever. But did he do that to kind of, like, close off the thing? Like, I didn't realize that he was leading them, basically.
Yeah, I think it's column A and column B. Okay. Like, I think it's a mix of things.
Okay.
But that, like... He needs to be there in order for the Purgle to be able to do this.
Right. Okay.
In order for them, like, because this is not something that Purgle do. They don't just grab ships and then like jump to hyperspace and then go. Holding
okay,
them.
Okay. So he's guiding.
Like, I think that there's a little bit of like a let's use some magic in order to make this a thing that happens. He's like
gotcha.
Connecting all of the Purgle so that they can all jump in sync together.
Okay. So that definitely gives more weight to it than I thought because I was just really confused by what was happening. I was like, oh, the Purgle's taking the ship as a pet. Oh, he's staying. And I like it just wasn't making sense. So I'm glad you're here to clear that up. That wasn't really clear to me. It felt like a throwaway moment without any context.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but now that you've kind of explained it, it definitely makes more sense.
Yeah, if you don't have that larger through line that Ezra has this connection, then it's tough.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. So then basically the rebels take back Lothal and everything's happy. They have their yub yub moment.
Yeah. Yub yub.
Everything turns white, as you mentioned previously.
Yeah.
I learned that Hera is a general, which makes her even more badass than she was.
Mm-hmm.
They basically, Ezra guides them to finish their task. So they send that ship, the dome or whatever, up into space, and it explodes. There's a big boom boom, and then the Empire is gone. And then what did I write? Oh yeah, and then it's the and that was a really cool ending. I really liked it. Everyone was happy and stuff, and then they're like, fuck the Empire and everything. And then we come to Sabine, yeah, who has a haircut to show that time had passed.
Yeah.
And then the end of like one of those university movies where they're like, everyone, this is what this person ended up doing. And yeah, this is what this person ended up doing and stuff. And it was really cute to kind of see everybody get their moment. But there wasn't one for her because basically it's implied that she's going to continue on some sort of adventure to find Ezra.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then Ahsoka shows up and I died a little inside of happiness. And that was rad.
Yeah.
Did I miss anything?
I think that's a pretty good recap.
I mean, I think you hit everything that was important.
Cool.
Yeah. And now it's 2021 and it's been 3 years since this end. Is that right? Yeah. 2021. Yeah, it's been 3 years since it ended and we still don't really have any answers. And for massive fans of Star Wars Rebels, it still hurts every time somebody brings it up. It says, where is Ezra? Which is the hashtag.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. But we got some answers last year, at least a little bit.
Well, yeah. I mean, like, there's actually conflict within the Star Wars community about this because a lot of us want Star Wars Rebels to continue in the format that it was created, which is animation, mm-hmm. right? So that all of the voice actors and stuff can come back and still play their characters, not be recast. On the other hand, the Mandalorian bringing attention to these characters is awesome because now all of these people are watching Star Wars Rebels and the Clone Wars, which is really, really
they
cool.
They need more information, more context. Yeah, for sure.
And in some instances, we get great stuff like Katie Sackhoff playing Bo-Katan, mm-hmm. both in live action and in animation, because it works out really well. And that character is modeled directly after her. So it's like, it's really easy for them to do that. With Ahsoka, it's a little bit more difficult because Ashley Eckstein is a voice actor, not necessarily an on-screen actor. And also, like, as great as she is in the role of Ahsoka, she doesn't have a lot of other credits. And I mean, she's a voice actor, so she has like a billion credits, but she doesn't have a lot of other noteworthy credits. Mm-hmm. Certainly not like the heavy lifting that you need from a character like Ahsoka moving forward. But then there's like these controversies around Rosario Dawson and.
Oh, really?
Yeah. There's a whole thing of like, a person that was working for her family, in the time that they were working for Rosario Dawson's family, this person transitioned. And so then there was some stuff with like Rosario Dawson's family not using the preferred pronouns. And then it turns into a fight and this whole thing. And like how involved is Rosario Dawson in this? And so like there are a lot of question marks there. And that's like a whole discussion. Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of fans who are kind of upset that while this is happening, she's cast as this character who's so important to so many people. But Ashley Eckstein really, I don't think, would be able to pull off what they need to do in live action for this character.
Yeah.
So it's like there are these weird catches, because then on the other hand, you've got Tia Sirkar, who plays Sabine, who is fantastic. And if you've watched The Good Place, she's fantastic in that show. And so she's done live action. She's done this other stuff, and she's actually, her star is kind of on the rise. So you're like, well, she should come back to play Sabine in live action. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, why does she get to? But actually, Eckstein does. So there's like, it's just like, it would be easier if this story continued in animation, but it's obviously not going to continue in animation, right? Because Disney Plus is all about this live action stuff now, because mm-hmm. it's so successful for them.
Yeah.
Because Mandalorian, up until they started doing MCU stuff, was the most watched television show on the planet, right? So, right. Yeah.
Yeah. I never really thought about it from that perspective, but it makes a lot of sense to be like, oh, I thought that people would be excited that that Mandalorian brought a lot of light to these things, but then a lot of people are just like, no, but I just want the animation to come back. And they're getting that with the Bad Batch, but maybe not for Star Wars Rebels.
It's a mixed bag. So like, as much as I'm excited for the Bad Batch, it's not what I ordered.
Yeah.
Right? Like I wanted the continuation of Star Wars Rebels, and that's what was rumored for a long time.
Right.
And now it's like, it seems like it's turned into this live action Ahsoka show. And like, it's now part of the Mandalorian storyline, which it's like, well, is that a good thing for the continuation of Star Wars Rebels and Ezra's story? Is it a good thing for the Mandalorian? Like, should the Mandalorian just stay focused on Mandalorians? Why does Ahsoka need to come in? Why do they need to split it off into Rangers of the New Republic?
Why did he give up the baby? Sorry. I just like the baby.
No, exactly. Why does Luke Skywalker need to show up? But connecting back to Thrawn and the Timothy Zahn stuff, is that actually Luke Skywalker, or is that a clone of Luke Skywalker from those books? Luke, of course, it's not. That would be really stupid if it turned out that Din Djarin just handed over the baby to a clone of Luke Skywalker that's actually working for Thrawn. But it's also not the dumbest thing that Star Wars has done. So, you know, there's a lot of questions right now in the Star Wars fandom of like, where do we go from here? What's next? But thankfully, Star Wars Rebels exists already, and we can just go back and rewatch it and be satisfied with that. Although, I will say, there are some bumps along the road. It is my favorite Star Wars. That's not to say that there aren't some episodes that I could do without.
Right.
But overall, it's fantastic. It's a great series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think the one thing that we didn't touch on very much, because he's not in this episode, is the character of Kanan. Mm-hmm. And Kanan Jarrus is, in my opinion, one of the best characters in Star Wars. I mean, like, mm-hmm. if I got to rank Star Wars characters, which I do because we're talking about stuff on the internet, Obi-Wan Kenobi's right at the top, and then Kanan Jarrus is very close behind him in that number two spot. And then after that is Poe Dameron, and then Rey, and then Darth Maul. And Darth Maul only because of the stories that we get in the Clone Wars and Star Wars Rebels. Mm-hmm. I actually hate Darth Maul in the movie, in Phantom Menace. It's like he's nothing. He's just he's all flash, all sizzle, no steak, right? Mm-hmm. But because of the animated stuff and because of his connection to Obi-Wan Kenobi, he rises up the ranks there. But Kanan is just this amazing, complex and nuanced character voiced by Freddie Prinze Jr. And Freddie Prinze is just a consummate Star Wars fan. I mean, like, it's real for him. Playing that character meant a lot to him, and it comes through in the performance. He understands what it is to be a Jedi and what that means and what the Force means. And he's got tirades on the internet that you can search and see him talk about it. Yeah. And he's just, he's such a phenomenal person. And it comes through in his performance as Kanan. And as a dad myself, like that connection of like him sort of wanting to do right by his Padawan, by this family that he's got, like there's stuff in there that connects for me, but he's just, it's difficult for me to put into words what that character means to me, but there's a connection there that I have to him and his story that actually connects back into the Clone Wars, in a really great comic book series. My favorite Star Wars comic book, Kanan Padawan Lost, that it's just like his story from the moment. So it's like the earliest moment that we see him until his final moments in Star Wars Rebels. I think it's one of the greatest arcs of any character in the entire franchise. Mm-hmm. And so many people miss out on it because cartoons are for kids.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Because cartoon equal bad. It equals lesser than. And it's like, look, I love a lot of things about the sequel trilogy. It is a jumbled mess. It doesn't have a clear vision. It is not satisfying at the end. Talking about Rise of Skywalker is a whole other thing.
Yeah.
But Star Wars Rebels from start to finish is a much better, much more cohesive story than anything that they've done in the films since Disney took over. And Dave Filoni being integral with The Mandalorian and with Ahsoka and Rangers of the New Republic and all of these other things is so important, because the reason why Rebels is great is because Dave Filoni learned directly from George. But much in the way that Yoda refers in The Last Jedi, it's like we are what they grow beyond, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
George Lucas is a visionary and a genius and deserves all of the credit. The prequels are also a bit of a mess. I love them for what they are, but they are also a bit of a mess. And The Clone Wars is awesome because it is the two of them working together. It's George passing the torch to Dave Filoni. But then Rebels is this very pure thing because it's the first thing that he did without George. Mm-hmm. And so overall, I think like it's always going to hold a special place in the pantheon of Star Wars because of that. It's the first Star Wars thing that's like canon. It's important to the overall story. If you don't watch it, you're going to kind of miss out on things, mm-hmm. In the sequels. All of that sort of, like, it informs the prequels. It informs the original trilogy. Princess Leia does show up at one point. Luke is referenced, and we see him from a very, very far different distance at one point. But Obi-Wan and Darth Maul's story comes to a conclusion in Star Wars Rebels. Like, there are so many things that are woven into it that are important that especially with the new stuff that's happening, you have to watch it. You just, if you're a Star Wars fan, if you enjoy this other stuff, it's required reading. That's all I can say about it.
Mm-hmm. So I did not watch Rebels when I was airing. I watched it on Disney Plus after I'd watched The Mandalorian. And then my friend coworker had convinced me to go back and watch these shows. And the difference, like Clone Wars is a show that I watched and I dropped out of and then sort of went back and finished it. And then watch Rebels. And the jump between Clone Wars and Rebels was just so breathtaking to me, because Rebels just had a lot, like it felt like it was having a lot more fun than Clone Wars did. And the characters are a lot more accessible. Clone Wars, something that people, I think, or that I feel like is not said enough about Clone Wars is how hard it is to follow sometimes, particularly the first three seasons, which just sort of jump around chronologically and stuff. Whereas Rebels gives you a core. And like as an adult, if I'm having trouble following it, I'm sure kids also have trouble following it. But it has this core, this core group of characters that's really, really fun. And I really, really like all of them. And also like has really interesting things to say about like toxic masculinity and stuff like that. That kind of like reframing the like Jedi training around that idea, and sort of pushing Star Wars in new directions. So I do love Star Wars Rebels very much. I do prefer it to Clone Wars. And I would say that I would have to recommend both to people, but I also think that there's other great cartoons out there too, that if you're really considering watching cartoons, there are cartoons without without lightsabers in them that are also worth watching. But as far as Star Wars cartoons goes, they're both pretty great. And I can't really say that about the other one, which I didn't finish. So
Resistance. Yeah. Resistance, well, Resistance is not, Resistance is a little bit weird because it's the one, Dave Filoni's an executive producer on it, but he's really hands off because he was making Mandalorian. We didn't know it at the time because Mandalorian hadn't been announced, but that's, it turned out that's what was going on. And then it also happened in the midst of The Last Jedi and Disney losing confidence in the direction that they were going. So Resistance is not satisfying in its conclusion because it was probably going to be three or four seasons and it is only two.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So that story is very much left hanging and wrapped up way too quickly. And you're just kind of like, wait, what? but yeah, those characters never connect. It changes very much from like concept to what they ended up actually doing with it. And they weren't allowed to play in that time period because of the movies, which is a shame. But I would say with the Clone Wars, you can jump around. You don't have to watch the whole series. There are a lot of episodes of Clone Wars that you can just straight up skip. Mm-hmm. There's like a core of episodes that are important, and then there's a bunch of stuff that just kind of happens.
Is there a link we could link or maybe?
You know, I've threatened for years to put together like here are the episodes you can't miss, but what it really comes down to is anything that Anakin, Obi-Wan, Captain Rex, and Ahsoka are involved in are required. Not necessarily all of it, but the that's a pretty good rule of thumb.
The majority. Mm-hmm.
Because like if it's a Mace Windu story, it's really not that important to the overall thing. There is the one Yoda story, and there's a group of clone troopers that you first encounter them in season one in an episode called Rookies, and you have to follow their whole storyline because it's important to Order 66. Mm. And it's important to Captain Rex. So
yeah,
it's like, that's kind of the core of what you need. But I've never gone through and actually like sort of done the list, and then you can put it in chronological order instead of the first three seasons jumping around all over the place until that one point.
Yeah.
So there's a way to watch Clone Wars that you can get through all seven seasons a little bit quicker than watching every single episode. But I also think that if you watch every single episode, you're not really losing anything. You're just kind of, the Jar Jar episode's just fun. You know, like there's silly stuff in there that's just kind of fun diversions.
There's an episode where they literally join a space circus to perform for pirates to break Ahsoka out of her imprisonment. And that is like one of my favorite crazy episodes. So
the Youngling arc is fantastic. And that involves Hondo Ohnaka, who was in this series finale. So
yeah, there you go. Yeah,
back when he was a bad guy.
So let's go and give the reviews. So, Melanie, did you want to go first?
Oh, I enjoyed every second out of this. I would give it, what are those piggies called again?
Ugnaught.
I would give it 10 dead Ugnaughts out of 10.
Solid.
Yeah.
Nice.
Solid episode. I loved everything about it. There was tension. There was, I cried a little bit. I laughed. It was, that was a trip and I loved it.
Nice. I'd probably give it 9 personal art pieces in Admiral Thrawn's collection out of 10. I very much enjoyed this episode a lot. I think there's, like, watching it again, and it's been a while since I've watched Rebels, I don't really know what was going on through some of it. But probably would be better with the context, but I did enjoy the episode overall.
Cool. I would give it 10 Loth Cats out of 10, but a Loth Wolf will come and eat one of those Loth Cats because Kanan is not in this episode.
Oh yeah.
not even like a ghost of, and I mean, like, granted, they wrap that stuff up really nicely in the previous episodes, but it would have been nice if his presence was felt just a little bit more. But that's, I mean, like, the way that I watched it last night, which was the final six episodes of the series, you kind of get all of that. It's kind of all contained there as a movie, but,
right.
But yeah, I gotta take away one mark just because of that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Fair.
Fair nice. Indeed. And would you go back and watch the rest of this series, Melanie?
Yeah, 100%. 100%. I'm probably going to watch. I'm probably going to watch Clone Wars too. Because, okay, here, let me ask this, because this is what I've heard about Clone Wars. Like, the point of it is kind of, it follows other Jedis so that when Order 66 happens, it's not that you're just seeing a whole bunch of people dying. It's you're seeing these Jedis that you now have some context and some love for die. Do you feel like Clone Wars, it like did that?
I didn't feel anything for those Jedis after watching Clone Wars, but that's just me.
You are heartless, though.
I am kind of heartless. So there you go.
Yeah, that is certainly one of the benefits. I think also you feel more for the clones specifically.
Yeah,
because you start to connect with them as characters. Although not many of them are specifically featured in Revenge of the Sith. Mm. There are reasons for that, retconned reasons, but there are reasons for that. Mm-hmm. But you do kind of get a connection to all of these sort of tertiary characters in the prequels that you didn't have before. It's an interesting thought exercise for me because I already had that connection because I am such a big Star Wars fan. So having watched the micro series, read the books that came out in between 2 and 3, because I was in the heat of it, right? Like,
right.
Like episode 2 happens and then I'm like, well, I want more now. And it's like, well, we've got all of this stuff coming out. That's all of this Clone Wars stuff. So I was I had a connection to Kit Fisto and Plo Koon and Mace Windu and Ki-Adi Mundi. I hate Ki-Adi Mundi, but that's okay. I did still have a connection. I liked it when he got shot. His big stupid cone head. He's a real jerk in the expanded universe stuff. Like he's kind of an asshole.
Right. Okay.
But so like I could go back at it and look at it and go like, well, not so much with the Jedi, but I think more so it really fleshes out Anakin's arc. It really leads you down the path to why he turns to the dark side. It's it becomes more than just a couple of moments, which is like his mother dies and then Padme's gonna die.
Yeah.
It becomes like his connection to Ahsoka is a major factor in his fall to the dark side.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't have that context before, but it changes that. And so I would say, like, if you're gonna watch Rebels, watch Clone Wars first.
Yes.
Because you want to have that connection to Ahsoka for when she shows up in Star Wars Rebels.
Right.
Because it will be that much more meaningful, especially her specific arc in Star Wars Rebels. Mm-hmm. Because it is very connected to at that point, Vader. Right. So,
and we know how much you love Ahsoka, Melanie.
Yeah, man. I gush.
For good reason. She's a fantastic character.
She is a fantastic character.
I will warn you. I mean, you've seen the Clone Wars 2008 movie. So, you know, when she first shows up, she's very obnoxious.
Yeah.
It takes a couple of seasons.
Yeah, for sure. She grows. But she grows from being like this little shit to being like this great.
Exactly. Yeah.
Character.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, like, yeah, it's kind of all part and parcel. If you want to enjoy any of this stuff, you got to kind of watch all of it.
Yeah.
You can enjoy it without it, but it's so much more rich. It's so much more flavor. It's like learning to, I don't drink wine, but if I did, I would say it's like learning to detect all of the different notes in wine and stuff like that. It's like anybody can pick up a glass of wine and be like, yeah, fine, whatever. But people who understand it, it's like, not to be too pretentious about it, but it's like you just get a deeper, it also means that when you pick up a bad glass of wine, like the Rise of Skywalker, you're like, oh God, this is awful. And you know exactly why.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah. And speaking of enjoying the finer notes of things, where can people enjoy the finer notes of your podcasting abilities?
I mean, on podcast services, you can just search for the Thunderquack podcast, Rebel Cells, and Faster, More Intense to find those. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Arkwulf, A-R-K-W-U-L-F, if you want to hear me get angry about all sorts of stuff on the internet.
Nice. Thanks so much for coming on and sort of nerding out with us on this May the 4th.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, May the 4th.
Yes. Yeah, it's totally May the 4th today. Happy Star Wars.
Yeah, it's daily more the 4th. We edited and released this episode today.
Yeah, 100%.
And finally, May the 4th be with you, Michael.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It was a lot of fun.
Thanks for coming and providing so much context and so much information.
My pleasure.
All very good. All stuff that I have absorbed and will now use in my daily discussions forever. Yes. And I'm going to go watch Clone Wars and I'm going to go watch Rebels. And then I will have even more context. I love Star Wars. I love it. Man. It's just, it makes me feel like a little kid. Like I'm watching I just love it.
Dessert Before Breakfast is hosted by Mike Dorval and Melanie Germain. Editing by me, Callan Dorval. Music by The Brass Action. Send us a voice message by using the link in the description or email us at dessertbeforebreakfast@gmail.com.